Connection! Connection!
Where do you seek the presence of God? Do you look for God in the midst of personal struggles and natural disasters? Or does God come to you like he came to Elijah in the still small voice that sneaks up after the wind and the earthquake and the fire? Where is God to be found anyway? Well, we're going to be talking with some people who've been struggling to answer that question. These are all people you've met before who in the past year have shared with us how and where they're seeking God's presence. I'm Bill Richards, and I'd like to welcome you to our first anniversary celebration. This is Connection.
Connection!
Connection is a year old now. It's time for a celebration. So we're going to celebrate God's presence in our lives. So sit back, open your ears, and your hearts. I think you'll feel an overwhelming sense of God's presence as you return to visit a few of those people you've met this past year on Connection.
A top young executive meets me in a coffee shop and says, "Bill, you know who I am, you know what I'm doing. I'm making more money than I ever dreamed possible. I am known not only in America but around the world in the field of environmental control. I have a lovely wife and family. I have three cars, a beautiful home. Tell me something, Bill. Why am I so damned unhappy?" Now, that's a theological question, and so we deal with it. This is the kind of thing that we do, dealing with the human problems.
You're listening to Bill Bird of Common Ground Ministries in Denver, Colorado. Bill created Common Ground to meet the needs of residents of the Denver Technological Center, a futuristic business community. His ministry provides a place where people in business can meet on the common ground of their human needs.
How does the church relate to the daily needs of people in business? In other words, if they're going to spend a large portion of their life at their work, that's where they're going to be hurting. Can the church come outside of its walls and meet them on their turf and deal with their problems as they face them?
Bill Bird of Denver, Colorado. You know, Bill talks about the church coming outside its walls. And from talking with you over the past year, I've seen God in all sorts of unexpected places. A lot of times not very close to church property. Like a free health clinic, for instance. Luis and Cheryl Desayas are medical students in Guadalajara, Mexico, who see health care for the poor as their form of ministry. Luis describes their experience for us.
Sometimes an aspirin, it's like a miracle. We found, and the people just turned to us as we were almost miracle workers for them, because no one had ever come to them, no one had ever given them any help. And all we were doing is something that we take so much for granted here. We're giving cheap vaccine, things that we take, that we just don't bother to give in this country sometimes. But to these people, made the difference between life and death. We were frustrated in the fact that we couldn't save the world. By the end of the day, we were, I guess, resigned to the fact that if we couldn't save the world, at least maybe we'd saved a few kids out of there with that 100 or 200 vaccines we gave.
Luis Desayas, who with his wife Cheryl is practicing a ministry of healing with the poor. But like Luis said, it's hard to accept the fact that you can't save everybody. You just can't reach the whole world. Jesus demands that we try to help as many people as we can, but he also says that insofar as we have helped the least of our brothers and sisters, we have helped him. You know, a concern for children has always been a part of our Christian faith. Maybe it expresses our belief in God's promises, our hope, our faith in the future. You might remember earlier this year meeting Barbara Gallagher of Belfast, Northern Ireland. That's a country torn in two, and it seems like the children are the ones caught in the middle. Barbara was touched personally by this tragedy, and she wanted to share it with us.
I didn't start writing just deciding that I was going to write poetry. I'd never written before. It was because of the killings of my husband's two cousins. Well, they were the sons of his cousin. It was a very sad killing, as all the killings have been. It was a reprisal for a killing the night before, and they chose these two brothers who had nothing to do with terrorist organizations. It's just someone decided they would have to lose their lives because Roman Catholics had lost their lives the night before. One of these brothers was just within 10 minutes of going to collect his newest baby daughter, 6 days old, from the hospital. And the other brother, they were expecting their third child 3 months later. And words came into my head, a little child shall lead them. And from there on, it just seemed to pour out. A little child shall lead them. Well, that is what they say. If I could only make some sense of what was done today. I'm very weak and helpless, for I'm only 6 days old. Daddy was to come for me. At least, that's what I'm told. Instead, the gunmen shot him and Uncle Bob as well. My grandpa heard the shooting and found them where they fell. Dear Father God, forgive them. For this is what he cried. His only sons, my dad and Bob, lay dead there, side by side. Now looking on the brighter side, I'm luckier than he who will be my little cousin. At least my dad saw me. Were I to lead, here's what I'd say. My dad was killed at work today, not just by him who shot the gun, but by all those too weak to shun the use of bullet, bomb, or tongue.
It seems to me that Barbara's poem isn't just about the tragedy in Northern Ireland. She talks about people killing people in a cycle of revenge where it just doesn't make any difference who's killed. It's one nameless, faceless victim for another. You know, we're all guilty in our own ways of making people into faceless victims, even here in the United States. Listen to Don Bakley of Kansas City talking about the victims of poverty.
I find that in America, we tend to generalize our hatred toward people. How many times you heard somebody say, niggers are no good. Welfare people are a bunch of lazy bums. What we're trying to do is erase their faces. And what I try to do is put faces back on my people.
Don is the director of Crosslines, an interdenominational inner city agency in Kansas City, Kansas. He's trying to use and coordinate all available resources in his area to fight poverty. And he feels that the church must be one of those resources. I know there are a lot of problems in our world today, and part of our faith is accepting our responsibility to get out there and work on them. But in the Gospels, we also get a peek at Jesus when he's talking to friends, laughing, taking part in a joyous wedding feast. Despite the dangers of his situation, he still found time for joy. So our faith also expresses joy in the goodness of creation, and thanks for the gifts God has given us. And there's no one I remember more from the past year for sharing this joy than Cornelia Herring of Memphis, Tennessee. She's the musical director of a kitchen band. It all began when she decided to move into Wesley Highland Towers, a United Methodist retirement home.
I have a friend at Asbury, very dear friend. And when I made application to go into Wesley Highland Towers, I gave her as a reference. And she said, Cornelia, I don't know whether I want to give you a reference or not. I don't think you'll be happy over there. You like to be involved in things, and you're just not ready to retire. And I don't think I will give. I just don't think I will recommend it. I said, well, Mary, you know better than that. I said, I can be involved anywhere I go. And I have never been so involved in my life as I have over there. I conduct a kitchen orchestra. I have to organize it. And the only instrument in it is a piano. We get a lot of fun out of it, and our horns are made of garden hose with a funnel on one end of it and a bazooka on the other end. And you know the old saying, the music goes round and round and comes out here? Well, I went down in the maintenance man's office, and we made those instruments. We cut those hoses. We took tape, and they'd say, oh, they don't need to curl it. I said, you just turn that around again. It makes a different sound when it has another curl to come out. And we have washboards, and we have some plastic dish pans with kitchen wooden spoons that we use for drumsticks. And we have tin pan tops that they hit together. And then one lady uses the spoons, you know. And we have one number three tub for the big drum, you know. Number three wash tub. Well, I don't know whether you ever lived in the country, but I've taken a mini bath in one. Well, we have the rhythm section and we have the horn section. We play everything.
When do you practice?
We practice every Monday afternoon at 6:30.
Is it possible for us to come over and record it?
Oh, I'd be delighted. Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? The band would be thrilled to death. When I get home, I'll call them and tell them about it.
You're listening to Connection. You might say that Connection was born on October 3rd, 1977, although it was talked about for a long time before that, and took months of planning and production before the first broadcast. But isn't that true of most births? Anyway, since that time, we've added more and more stations and more listeners to our family. Part of the reason we wanted to create this special celebration of our anniversary was to mark a milestone in our lives. But we had other reasons, too. And that's where you come in. We thought you might enjoy hearing from some folks you met earlier this year. We thought that hearing their stories again might give you an opportunity to think about the way that you see God working in your life. So we're making an audio cassette of this special anniversary program available to you, free and postpaid. And on the reverse side, we'll also include some of the dramatizations of the history of Methodism that you've heard this past year. All you need to do is write and ask for the anniversary cassette. Our address is Connection, Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202. That's Connection, Post Office Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202. And ask for the anniversary cassette. I'll repeat that address a little later, along with a phone number, if you prefer to call. Listening to Connection. Our correspondents around the country have spent the past year talking with you, trying to find out where you see God at work in your lives. And with your help, we've discovered God in a lot of unexpected places. Take government, for example. Most of us in the United States grew up learning that church and state should be kept separate. But does that mean that faith and public service must be kept separate too? Well, last year we talked to Judge Taylor Phillips of Macon, Georgia. And he answered with a resounding no. Judge Phillips is responsible for the fate of many people who come before his bench. Does this man belong in prison? What about her? Can she be rehabilitated? He has to make decisions like these every day. And he feels he's helped by his faith and his sense of God's presence in people's lives. He describes one of the ways he puts his faith to work.
Every Christmas I have an early release program, about 30 days before Christmas, or sometimes 20 days. I'll catalog all the people that would normally get out by March of the next year. And we go through them and find those that we feel can maybe make it back in society. And then we counsel with them, we bring them into court, I give them a lecture, we release them. And of that number, over the years that I've been doing it, and I've been doing that since 1968, I guess, we've had no more than 5% come back. The rest of them have stayed out. There are some people, I'm certain, that probably you're going to have to keep under some kind of supervisory care the rest of their lives because they're going to be in trouble, and you probably will not rehabilitate them. Not unless they are able to see the saving grace of God. And some people see it and some don't, whether they're in prison or not. So it doesn't make any difference whether they're criminals or not. The question is how they're going to live with their lives.
You know, that says something to me. The way people live their lives, well, that's how God is at work in the world. And it amazes me how many different expressions of God's work there are. Take Sharon Maida, for instance. While some people find that talking explicitly about God is a very important part of their faith, others like Sharon do not. Sharon feels that she can live out her faith without naming either God or Christ, and without using traditional ways to talk about them. Sharon lives in Seattle, Washington. She's a Japanese-American woman breaking into the world of communications. And she thinks of this work as her own form of ministry. She describes for us her feelings about her faith.
It's very difficult for me to verbalize it. It's a very personal, ongoing experience for me. And while I am now a professional communicator, I don't communicate my faith by talking about God. I believe that in everything I do as a communicator, I am in some way communicating my faith and a humanistic attitude towards society and a move for social justice in many arenas. And I think that speaks to God. And I feel very uncomfortable speaking about God outside of that overall context.
Both Judge Taylor Phillips and Sharon Maida feel that their faith enriches the work they offer to the public. But sometimes it happens the other way around. Instead of our faith enriching a part of life that's really outside the four walls of the church, every once in a while something that didn't start out in church adds to our faith. That's Harry Folsom's story. Harry is a Native American from Tallahena, Oklahoma, a United Methodist who's found that his Christian faith is enriched by his American Indian culture and its values.
People have always said, oh, the Indians have assimilated into society. That's not entirely true. We have assimilated in a way that we have taken things that make life more convenient, like cars and like telephones and houses and all the modern conveniences our people use. But that's kind of where the assimilation more or less ends. The cultural values of the Native American people are what I feel is still is intact and always will be. They're very human kinds of values. We have harmony, complete harmony, harmony with nature, harmony with God, man, your fellow man, and within yourself. The way I interpret this is that most of the dominant culture, when you're born, you're projected to go through school, high school, college, or some kind of training so that you can get a job. For what? So you can make some money. For what? So you can have things. But the Indian culture feels that it's most important to be happy today, to be in harmony with God, to feel good about your relationship with God today, to be at peace with your brothers, the members of your tribe, your community, and then to feel good inside with yourself. And if you're in harmony with God and with your fellow man, that also means that you have to be in harmony with nature because God made that. And so all life is sacred.
You're listening to Connection. We're spending our first anniversary celebration visiting with some old friends, talking with them about where they seek God's presence in the world. But you know, sometimes we don't have to look very far. Sometimes God is as close to us as our closest friend, or our family, or our innermost thoughts and feelings. So we find God in our own lives in times of joy or in times of personal crisis. This past year, we talked with Ruth Ann Brown of Des Moines, Iowa, not long after she had undergone the personal crisis of divorce, and she told us how she came to feel God's presence in the midst of her struggle.
I kind of think maybe there are some marriages that God doesn't bless in the first place. Probably the most loving thing I did for my husband in a long time was to divorce him. I think that we were stifling each other as persons, and I think he would not have taken the initiative to do anything about the situation. But I perceive him as happier and healthier and with more potential for growth now that we're apart. I felt God's presence very closely throughout this process of decision-making and action-taking. I spent a lot of time in prayer and contemplation, did some searching of Scripture, finding the kinds of passages that speak of God's love for us and God's acceptance of us and nurturing of us as whole persons.
Ruth Ann Brown of Des Moines, Iowa. Ruth Ann talks about God nurturing us as whole persons, and that reminds me of Jesus' words in the 12th chapter of Mark's Gospel, where he commands us to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Jesus encourages us, well, even demands that we be whole persons and that we give ourselves to each other and to God wholeheartedly. Of course, making a wholehearted faith commitment is no guarantee that we'll be spared our share of troubles. Things still happen to us that overwhelm us or threaten our security. Take Fanny Cheney, for example. Her faith is strong, but her life's been full of sorrows, too. Fanny's a black woman from Meridian, Mississippi, whose oldest son, James, lost his life while working in the civil rights struggle of the early 60s. From then on, Fanny was unable to get a job in her hometown, so she moved to New York City for a fresh start. 6 years later, she got a phone call from her only surviving son, Ben, 17 years old.
The phone rang, and I answered the phone. And he said, "Hey, Mama." I said, "Hey." He said, "How you doing?" I said, "I'm all right. How you doing? Where you at?" He said, "I'm in South Carolina." I said, "South Carolina?" I said, "What you doing there?" He said, "Sit down." I said, "What you mean?" He said, "I got something to tell you." I said, "What's wrong, Junior?" I said, "Well, what's wrong? Where you at?" He said, "Mom, I'm in jail." I said, "What?" He said, "I'm in jail." I said, for what?" He said, "Well, Mama, you know, I didn't do what they got me accused of." I said, "What? What they got you accused of? Who got you accused?" He said, "They got me accused of killing, a murder."
Ben was originally denied his request to call his mother. It was only after interrogation that he was allowed to call her and make arrangements for a lawyer. He was convicted of felony murder, which means that he was present at the time of a murder, and was given 2 life sentences in prison. A lot of questions have been raised about Ben's interrogation, trial, and sentencing. Throughout this ordeal, Fanny's received help from her church, Grace United Methodist Church, which has sponsored a fund for Ben's defense. And she's turned to God to find personal strength. It seems like a lot of times our troubles are not of our own making, and our faith won't make them simply disappear. But maybe it can give us an inner strength to find hope in the midst of our sorrow. This is what happened in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, when floodwaters took the lives of many townspeople and destroyed their homes. We talked with some of the survivors of the flood, and it made me feel like we had lived through that terrible night, too. James McGinnis of Albright United Methodist Church maybe sums up the feelings expressed by these survivors.
We are taking a step at a time in faith, and we are aware of the presence of God and of the prayers of many others because we're operating on a strength that's not our own. Our faith is a very authentic faith, and that includes for both crucifixion and resurrection. There's no cheap triumphalism. Hey, let's go on as if nothing ever happened. God has triumphed, fa-la-la-la-la. Nor is there a defeatist attitude. We are beaten, broken, deserted, crucified, and left. There is a sense of both. Perhaps what we're in now is the Saturday of the weekend between Good Friday and Easter Sunday, somewhere in between the crucifixion and the resurrection. this experience of death very much with us, and yet the beginnings of the sound of the stone rolling away, and a belief that that will indeed happen.
I think that all of us, in our different ways, live out our lives on the Saturday between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. We all exist somewhere between despair and hope, between death and life, not able to escape the world's troubles, but believing that there is something to life that makes it all worthwhile. That eventually the stone will roll back from the tomb and life will come out victorious. It just seems to me that the time Jesus spent in the tomb had to be the ultimate expression of God with us. Because in Jesus, God put himself between death and life, where we are, and showed us that even in the most hopeless situations, there is hope. You know, there's an old saying that goes, God's in his heaven and all's right with the world. But have you ever really thought about what that means? What would the world really be like if God's place was in heaven and only in heaven? Would everything be all right? I don't think so. It seems to me that a lot of despair in our world comes from people crying for a stronger sense of God's presence. And the hope, well, it comes from folks who feel God's presence every day as they go about doing the things all of us do just to get along. I'm convinced that God's place isn't just in heaven. It's in the world, too. And if we look, I think we'll find God there. And you know what's convinced me of this? It's been the experience of talking with people like you and hearing you share your faith with one another. It's been the experience of connection. I hope that connection has meant to you a little of what it's meant to me in the past year. And you know, this is just the beginning. With such a great year to look back on, imagine what we've got to look forward to. Connection is brought to you by the people of the United Methodist Church, connecting people to faith, people to people, people to action. Remember, if you'd like to have an audio cassette of this special anniversary program, free and postpaid, just write to us and ask for the anniversary cassette. Our address is Connection, Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202. That's Connection, Post Office Box 6, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202. Or if you'd like to order by telephone right now, call our toll-free number. There are people standing by to take your request. The toll-free number is 800-251-8140. Or if you live in Tennessee, call us in Nashville, collect 615-327-1951. I'll repeat the numbers for you. The toll-free number is 800-251-8140. If you live in Tennessee, call us collect in Nashville at 615-327-1951. We hope you've enjoyed Connection's first anniversary. I'm Bill Richards. Connection.